today we had in our studio with us Lynn Crabtree, owner of Master's Choice. Along with that, we talked about five reasons why your milk production may be down this year, and then kind of the nutritional testing and protocol for Master's Choice. So with that, we thank you for joining us and hope you enjoy today's podcast. So, hey, I want to welcome you to the first ever Master's Choice podcast, affectionately known as MC Podcast. So this is the first ever time that we've gotten together to be able to discuss topics of silage making, of feeding corn, of the corn business, of agriculture in general, just things that topics that may come up from different people here at Master's Choice. My name is Mark Kirk. I am the director of nutrition research here. I'm going to be the host of the podcast. Because first of all, I have the best voice and the ugliest face, and so they figured that it's better to have a guy talking than on camera. So the absolute opposite of that, though, here this morning is the owner of Master's Choice, Lynn Crabtree. He will be my guest this morning as we discuss several topics and everything. So Lynn, how are things with you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. Good to be here with you this morning. And things are great. I just think that I'd like to tell the folks that how much I appreciate you and how much that you're doing for Master's Choice and in particular for me, because most people know that as a livestock nutritionist, dairy consultant, back in the early days before I got to know the previous owner of Master's Choice and a little bit more about the genetic base that made us a little different, the nutrition was everything that was a driving force behind the things that I was doing and the things that I was proposing and pushing for Master's Choice. And you have been that guy who's kind of come along and picked up that banner for me and taken it to another level. And so the things that were the most important to me, have been those things that are the most important to you, I think, in this business. And so we've got that neat camaraderie I just really appreciate you and for everything that you do and really thrilled that you're going to be doing these MC podcasts for folks and sharing a lot of nutritional information.
Well, hey, Lynn, I appreciate that. And you're right. I mean, you hit on it. I appreciate the fact that you let a guy like me come in and be part of something that and really grab a hold of something that he really loves. And I think that, I love animals and really I do. Probably sometimes more than I like people. And I kind of like people, so but I appreciate that, and I appreciate you letting me take that from where you started it, and what a great foundation that was, and then have helped me to grow in that and understand exactly the importance of why Master's Choice needs to be a corn company that is focused on livestock production, on livestock feed, and really had instilled that in me and allowed me to really grab hold of something that kind of hit a sweet spot for me. So I appreciate that.
It's really neat, Mark, to be able to be a part of something, a part of a movement that makes a difference, and making a difference on the farm is what drives this staff, as people, as you well know. I wish that the folks out there could realize just how committed that the people that work in the offices at Master's Choice and the fields at Master's Choice and the plants and the fields at Master's Choice are committed to that. It's a very cool thing.
It is a very cool thing, and it's definitely been a rallying point for all of us and an easy place to rally for whatever reason. It's been one of those things that I think was a God-given gift for us to be able to rally behind that as he showed you that in this industry, in agriculture, and especially in the corn industry, as he showed you this place where people were not being serviced, and this place where people were not being focused on, and that is the fact that breeding and selecting corn hybrids for livestock production. Mm-hmm. 40%, you know this as well as I do, Lynn, that 40% of the corn grown in the United States is fed to livestock. And there's only a small percentage of the corn that is bred and developed. There's only a small percentage of the corn that is specifically bred and developed for livestock. And you saw that, God illuminated your mind in that and allowed you to see that, and then allowed you to reveal and show that vision to others who could really get it. And I think that he really worked that out for you and for this company, and really appreciate that. So let's get into a few subjects this morning. One of them would be that this last year we kind of had a pretty interesting growing season across the country. And in fact, one of the things that I hear often, when, and you probably do, Lynn, is this term. When we have a normal year. And the response usually is, well, what's a normal year look like, you know? And so maybe the abnormal is the normal these days. But this last year we had a very interesting growing season, and so we had everything from too much rain here in the upper Midwest to not enough in the East and in New York. And actually, New York, you were just out there a few weeks ago. What were those guys saying about the weather conditions in New York this past summer?
It had been really dry, yields were down a little bit there. Interestingly enough, quality of what looked like the silage that was coming in might be a little better there than what it is in upper Midwest, where they had a lot better growing conditions. And so that might be something that we should talk about a little bit this morning.
Absolutely. So let's just jump in right there. You know, so what are some of the characteristics that have been seen and talked about out of the silage quality this year? You said that in the Northeast that it was dry. What kind of silage does that typically make when that conditions are dry and fairly hot?
Well, on the adverse side, where we're looking at maybe, you know, some poorer growing conditions, drier conditions, contributing to silage that quality was down, probably didn't have an adequate level of starch compared to the percentage of fiber. So your starch levels in the silage, instead of running, you know, up there in that 35% range, which might be more towards ideal or even higher, were down under 30%, 25%, because the ear size was limited, as well as the tons of silage. It kind of depends on when the drought hits, what's going to happen. A lot of the folks out there were telling me that they had nice ears, you know, that the Master's Choice corn had a nice big ear on it. The percentage of starch in the diet was good, and so the amount of yield was down somewhat, but the quality was up. That silage, that growing corn took on enough heat units, enough sunlight, you know, that we had decent and good energy values, and then the starch levels being up, so the quality was fairly good. For the folks that I talked to, I don't assume that that's, you know, perfect scenario across the East to be a blanket statement, but the folks that I talked to, that's some of the things they were saying.
Absolutely. And I heard some things about fiber digestibility out of the East. You know, we know that in droughty conditions that fiber digestibility usually increases.
Yes.
And so, you know, that plant.
More heat.
Yeah, more heat. But that plant is designed or created so that it reproduces, mm-hmm. and so its main function and goal is to produce seed, and so what I've seen a lot of times with droughty corn is that it's a lot shorter in stature, it's a lot smaller, because it's partitioning all the energy away from structural material in that plant. To basically make grain, and so we have less of that structural material there, which would be lignin, which is a lot of that. It's mostly indigestible to ruminant animals, and so it's pulling that energy from building that plant to basically just going reproductive is its goal. And so we typically find
survival.
Some better survival, absolutely. So, but we typically find some better fiber digestibility, which is oftentimes the opposite of what we find, like we did this summer in the upper Midwest, where we had almost perfect growing conditions at times, lots of water, lots of things, and that in itself produces its own problems. So what kind of problems would ideal, perfect, maybe even too perfect growing conditions produced for guys?
Can I back up just a second and say one other issue that that folks were kind of dealing with out there on the East Coast, and that is that a lot of our sunlight is going into developing plant sugars in the plant, as you suggested, and then a lot of those sugars are leaving the plant for to go to the roots for to helping that corn plant survive, and then they're not in the base of that stalk when we go to chop that corn. And so therefore, we don't have that nice dense material as readily available in the base of the corn stalk as we normally would, and so we're not getting as good a pack in a lot of our bunkers. We're not getting as good a possibly fermentation because of that. So that's another issue that some of the folks out east were discussing in some of the meetings that we had out there. That was an issue for them. Silage was just a little bulkier, was not quite as good for pack as it normally would be.
That absolutely makes sense. And consequently, I kind of heard the same thing from the Midwest for the opposite reason. Because we had almost ideal, perfect growing conditions here, and it just kept raining. And it just kept raining, and corn kept maturing, and guys, I know that there were a lot of guys in Wisconsin, in central Wisconsin, that actually had to, that started in chopping and actually had to kind of back out and say, this is too dry, we're going to have to take it for high moisture corn.
Yeah.
And so what we saw there was we saw perfect growing conditions where the plant just thought, man, I'm getting everything I need. I can become this big, beautiful plant, putting on all kinds of structural material there to build the plant because it said, look, I've got enough energy to reproduce. Let's make the biggest plant that we can. And so, heard that there were fairly good yields in the upper Midwest, but the quality of that silage was was just a little bit lower than the year before. For those two reasons. One, it was putting on all the structural material, so fiber digestibility was down. But then it also kept raining, so they had to get it too dry, and so it affected their packing, it affected their fermentation, it affected all of those things. And so now as they're going into that, they're having to adjust some rations and try to figure out some very creative ways to make milk with that corn. fortunately, I have heard a lot of good things about Master's Choice corn this year. And in fact, I was in central Wisconsin last week and basically talking to a nutritionist. And he said, I'm feeding some Master's Choice corn right now that should not be feeding well. He said, on paper, it's too dry. On paper, it just doesn't have enough there. And he said, it's making more milk than the models show that it should. And so I love to hear things like that, but sometimes it makes even me scratch my head to go, okay, what is it about this that's feeding so well? And I think there are many factors in there. But Lynn, your opinion, what could be some of those factors that would make that feed better than what the tests show that it is?
I think that there's an overriding factor here with the Master's Choice corn, Mark, and I think that it's something that we used to talk about a lot in the early days. You know, 11, 12 years ago when Paul and I first purchased Master's Choice, in some of the reasons and some of the things that some of the folks were talking to us about the differences in our corn, and that is the fact that it photosynthesizes more sunlight. The genetics are determined to drive more sunlight. We, you know, a very simple genetic selection process that was going on for us back in those days, and it was selecting plants for sugar bricks. And what we really thought that we were doing was selecting plants that was going to compete against row crop corn, but what we were trying to do was develop corn hybrids, or what our previous ownership team was trying to do with the genetic program was develop hybrids that had more natural insect tolerance and more natural disease resistance. And they were doing that naturally within the plant by building up more plant sugars. And so I think that that's got everything to do with it. In a stressed year, you're going to see Master's Choice corn outperform the others, because in a stressed year, it's absorbing more sunlight, and it's using that, whether it's a dry year or whether it's an unusually wet year, you know, stressed in whatever manner, it's still attracting and pulling more sunlight. Sunlight is, as you know, directly related to the amount of energy in that plant, and those plant sugars are creating that. And so I think that that's singularly the biggest difference in what's going on with the Master's Choice corn than it is with some of the other corn that are out there.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that from my perspective, as part of the team that selects hybrids based on nutritional quality and kind of helps steer and develop some of that testing to see, you know, how do we test hybrids to see if they've got all of those things? Because there's a lot of times at labs that, you know, you get a standard forage analysis and it's not all there. Fortunately, we've been able to work with different labs, forage labs in this country, and been able to
really kind of partner with them in a sense, and really kind of discover how do we make this whole Forge analysis process better, and so then that adds to, okay, so now that we've made the Forge analysis process better, how do we bring that into hybrid development and hybrid selection and all of those things? And so with us as Master's Choice, you know, there's a system in place with lots of different levels that we're looking for when we're selecting a hybrid.
Yep.
It's not just your standard starch as a percentage of dry matter, and it's not just your NDFDs. You know, there are over 20 different layers that we look at as we are analyzing whether or not a corn hybrid reaches the potential or the standards that we would see would benefit livestock producers. And so we've been, fortunately, you know, we've been able to work with labs and say, look, we need a test that shows us this. You know, we need a test that shows us how much sugar is in that plant. We need to be able to work with a lab that says, you know, how do we test not only the amount of starch, but the digestibility of that starch, you know?
And you got to understand that there's two ways that I look at that. You know, I love your enthusiasm, and I love the way that you're working with some really key folks out there in the industry. I mean, some of the best folks in the world.
Absolutely.
That you're working alongside, and you're coming up with all this neat stuff, you know, and you're developing ways of testing corn that nobody else has ever done, and are helping to make that picture clear so that we can predict what a corn silage is going to do or what a corn grain is going to do for milk or meat production. But you got to understand it. I look at that in another way. You know, that's really expensive. You know, the things that you're doing are exciting and are neat and you're cultivating new ground. But man, oh man, are you costing me some bucks?
Well, hopefully, as much money as I'm costing you, that I'm making you that much back. I would agree. You know, I'm not a cheap date.
Fair enough.
But I'm a good date. Yeah, you know. is where I like, you know, that's kind of the balance I'd like to strike there. But you're right, you know, it's not cheap. It's not cheap. We've got over you know, somewhere between 25 and 30 research plot locations throughout the country. On any given year, we're taking two samples, sending those off to different labs, getting them tested for different things, because not every lab gives me or gives us the all of the things that we need, and so we're taking double samples. We're sending those off. We're sending them to different labs. We're sending them to grain quality labs. We're doing all this testing. And you're right. It's not cheap, but I think that we have been able to see the advantage of this kind of testing in the field, and especially in being able to produce milk and meat and those kinds of things.
You've never really stepped out and been you know, very vocal about what that process looked like, and so most people probably don't understand that. You know, when they look at their lab analysis of their corn silage or of their grain, they're looking at just a few pieces. You know, two or three key elements that they're looking at in terms of that analysis. You've got, you know, I don't even know how many now. You've got over two dozen individual tests on each sample that you're looking at to make that determination. You know, and most of those are not currently available, you know, in the marketplace at commercial labs.
Yep.
Things
yep.
that are done specifically for you.
Yes.
That no one else gets done, and you've never really kind of honked that horn, but that's it's a pretty neat and admirable thing.
You know, I really appreciate that, Lynn. And you know, part of the reason I don't know, you know, part of the reason I don't think I've honked that horn as loud as maybe is some guys would around here or out and about is, you know, I really see that God has given me a gift and ability to be able to make the right relationships with the right people at the right time, and be able to have the right ideas at the right time. You know, we were laughing this morning before the podcast. You know, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. you know? And so sometimes I see these gifts that God has given and just said, you know, hey, you know, how can I honk my horn about this? Because I do it, you know, it's just a you know, it's just this God given ability. And he has, you know, he I have relationships with guys who are, you know, who are much smarter than me. You know, they were hard to find, you know, in this country, you know, there were, you know, cause I think there's probably about three or four guys smarter than me in the whole world, you know, and is that the kind of horn honking you're thinking about?
No,
there?
No, not the kind of.
So, you know, Lynn, all kidding aside, I've been able to, build relationships with some of the most key industry leaders. You know, Dr. Charlie Sniffen I would even consider him a friend of mine. I can pick up the phone, I can call him. He has been one of my ruminant nutritionist mentors, along with an old feed guy named Vic Lutz that very few people will know. But Charlie Sniffen, he has been around. He's seen so many things. He and yet he is still fresh enough to wanting to be developing and push the industry forward. And so building relationships with him, Dave Casper, Dr. Dave Casper, building a relationship with him and getting his take on things. Dr. Mike Van Amberg, being able to use his knowledge in his things, where he's been pushing the industry. And another one of those guys that has really helped me in my progression through this and really helped Master's Choice kind of help find their way and fine tune, especially in the nutritional testing thing, is Dr. John Gaser. And John is very, very quickly becoming one of the industry leaders, even as a young guy.
Yeah.
And very smart, very intelligent, very articulate. And so John works with Rock River Labs out of Wisconsin, and so really have enjoyed getting to know him. And so I think we could probably give John a call, and we'll give him a call. We'll just ask him, you know, what's going on at Rock River Lab. We'll ask him about some nutritional testing and ask him about some things that he's seeing with Forge Quality this year.
Good idea.
And so so we'll give him a call. Dr. John Gaser from Rock River Labs is joining us, and he's going to talk a little bit about some new things there at Rock River Labs and maybe a little bit about what he's seeing out of forage samples this year. John, thanks for joining us. I hope things are well in Watertown today. How are you?
We're well, dealing with a little bit of an internet outage, but happy to be in my office and look forward to maybe offering a little bit of what we're seeing today out through the countryside.
Good deal, good deal. Hey, tell us a little bit, just a kind of a little brief thing of two or three things that are new going on at Rock River Labs right now.
Yeah, that's a good question. Forage testing laboratories have a lot of different tools in the toolbox, but some of the things that we're working on a little bit harder and I think are coming out to benefit nutritionists, dairy, and feedlots are focusing in on amino acid nutrition, fatty acid nutrition, and then also looking at multi-time point starch digestion within the rumen to get maybe a little bit more clear picture of what's happening within corn silage, corn grain, and any high starch feed within the rumen. So those would be a few areas that we're focusing on pretty hard.
Good. Is that being pretty well received out in the industry?
You know, it's a good question. So we brought something forth, not a sales pitch, but a comprehensive approach to looking at a nutrition analysis, and the feedback and I guess desire for more information to build our rations and maybe hone in terms of precision and accuracy a little bit more in fatty acid nutrition and amino acid nutrition and perhaps then carbohydrate metabolism has been very strong. The desire is very strong for more insight and information. So the reception has been fantastic.
Good deal. Good deal. So tell us just again, you know, maybe a little brief summary of some of the, so Rock River has labs all over the country, a newer lab in New York. You work out in California, different places throughout the Midwest. Are you seeing any differences in forage quality throughout the country this year?
Great question. Appreciate the opportunity to introduce Rock River Laboratory scope, maybe just a little bit. So half of our business is on the soil and the agronomy side, dealing with plant tissue really nutrition from the soil up into that growing plant. And then the other half of our business is in animal nutrition, more or less doing nutrition facts like on the side of your Cheerios box.
Yeah.
So it's a fun business to be in. And then we have offices in New York and Ohio and two in Wisconsin and California. So that gives us an opportunity to span from east to west coast, like you mentioned before, looking at the United States domestically. We also have a few offices in South America now, in Chile, Argentina, and Brazil. Those offer us a unique perspective to look internationally. And then we've more recently partnered and opened an office in Europe.
Absolutely awesome.
Europe. So we've now got a global view, if you will, of what's happening a little bit in nutrition. But domestically, what we're seeing within the United States, it's interesting. The Western U.S. Looks to be pretty consistent relative to prior years in terms of forage quality. They tend to be a little bit less in terms of quality, energy per ton of feed, warmer growing environment, irrigation, maybe a little bit less in terms of fiber and starch availability than the upper Midwest and the Northeast, where we have cooler growing climates that seem to lend towards a little bit more digestible crop. But within the Midwest to the East and the Northeast and New England area, we're seeing a little bit harder grain this year, a little bit harder starch, particularly in our corn grain. The corn silage looks to be feeding pretty fantastic. Starch availability in corn silage looks fantastic. But yet, for whatever reason, environment or maybe missing our harvest window or maybe there's some characteristics within the grain this year. We've got a harder grain ranging from high moisture to cornmeal or ground corn. And that's showing up from Wisconsin through south of the lakes and out into Pennsylvania and New York. And that's really intriguing.
Okay. Interesting. Good. So fiber quality, what's fiber quality look like across the board?
Fiber quality is a little bit more variable depending upon the region. We're learning a lot about the environmental influence on fiber digestibility, how the dairy cow, how the steer, how ruminants can really unlock fiber's potential. It looks to be kind of hanging around our long-term average. It's not catastrophically low, but nor is it exceptionally high. So not really seeing much in terms of the upper Midwest, Wisconsin through Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa. As we get out into New York, Pennsylvania, up into Vermont, those cooler growing conditions have lended again towards better fiber digestibility. So it looks like the east and northeast is a little bit better quality for it, but I think that's more of a year-over-year effect due to latitude, cooler growing environment. So fiber digestibility doesn't look to be maybe a huge factor this year like it has been in prior years where we've had some challenges. But interestingly, with the growing environment, we've also had, it looks like, a little bit dirtier feed this year, and that's certainly been a hot topic.
Yeah, dirtier as in toxins? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, right, and so mycotoxin being produced from mold and fungi, that's gotten a lot of attention, and there very much are greater concentrations of mycotoxin, mold-produced mycotoxin, coming from the soil, coming from the field this year in feedstuffs, but we're also recognizing bacterial contamination.
Okay.
And then couple that with perhaps a little bit less starch availability within the rumen, perhaps maybe a little bit greater amount of starch getting into the lower gut. We're creating maybe a more conducive environment to negatively impact animal health and performance. So that has been a lightning rod of a topic here recently, and one that we have quite a bit to learn about yet.
Good. Hey, John, I want to thank you again for joining us and taking time out of your busy day. Really appreciate you and your team there at Rock River Labs, and just wish you guys a lot of success in the future, buddy. Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for calling in today.
Yeah, we appreciate the comments, and welcome to be part of it. Have a wonderful day.
Hey, you too, John. Thanks. All right, buddy. Thanks, bud. All right.
Bye
now. Bye-bye. All right. Well, we appreciate John calling in and being able to spend time with us and being able to talk with us and really do like him, and salt of the earth kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Really is.
Not afraid to be outside the box.
Not afraid to push the industry. Not afraid to question the industry either.
Exactly right.
Lynn, we were talking a little bit earlier, and we heard some things from John. What kinds of things, and maybe, every year's different.
Every year is different. Forage quality is going to be different. Every growing season is different. But if guys are having trouble, if guys are having trouble this year, what are maybe some five reasons, if you could think in your mind, five reasons why they may not be getting the production out of their corn that they would like or have in the past. What would be a 5-point checklist that you would give guys?
I think we kind of talked a little bit about this earlier on when we were talking about geography and weather across the country and how it was very different. Upper Midwest, the last couple of years they've had some incredibly good growing seasons. I don't think that they've had enough sunlight for the crop that's been grown. It's grown rapid, it's grown fast, a lot of cloud cover, a lot of rain, and plant sugars weren't there, and we talked quite a bit about that. But you're going to want to check your overall starch levels because depending on how this weather was, it was really good, it was really stressed, and when it was and when it wasn't, and whether the weather, robbed you of some fertility, your nitrogen levels were low because we leached some nitrogen, some of those things that were all weather related, you're going to want to look at the starch levels and see what percentage of starch to dry matter is in that silage. And then, of course, the newest thing out there in the industry is we want to look at our starch digestibility, something
absolutely
that we've been
absolutely
talking about for the last 10 years, that there is differences in how our fiber is digested and the levels in which it's digested. There's differences in our starch and the levels that it, in the way and the manner in which it breaks down and the speed and the manner in which it breaks down and how readily it is accepted by the animals. So you're going to want to check your starch digestibility levels. Fiber digestibility is still half of the dry matter, and it's been largely affected by weather.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And, part of that's been fertility. We've had a lot of moisture. It's pushed that leached some of our fertility that the crop didn't get, and in some cases it's, we've just had, we've had a lot of fertility and maybe some nitrate issues and pulling up plenty of fertility where the plant hasn't grown.
So just kind of off the cuff, I think as we talk about fiber digestibility, two of those areas that we probably need to look at are UNDFD30.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how they are compared to years before. It's not the above all end all, but it's a great place to start. Our models are kind of built on some of that. So UNDFD30, but also one of the things that are NDFD30, we need to look at that. But one of the other things that we need to look at is UNDF 240s. UNDF 240, if we have UNDF 240 that's too high this year, we're gonna limit gut fill and dry matter, or we're gonna increase gut fill and decrease dry matter intake. And so maybe some guys, you're not getting the production out of your corn this year because your UNDF 240 is too high. We kind of want that level. I really like that level when I'm picking out a hybrid. I really like that level somewhere in the single digits. Would really like it around 7 or 8. Yep. I think that we can really do well there. But I've seen some pretty high this year. And so maybe if you're a producer out there and you're just not getting the production out of your corn, your corn silage that you really expected, especially after a great growing condition, then maybe those are some areas. Starch digestibility levels, total starch levels. And one other thing was, what was the moisture of your corn when you put it up? And so that can really affect how that corn feeds. If you put it up too wet or too dry, that can really, really affect that in that.
Huge challenge this year for a lot of folks.
Absolutely. Absolutely a huge challenge.
One of the things, Mark, that I think that we could touch on here just briefly is looking at that fiber digestibility, that old friend, that NDFD30.
Yes.
And they've been down this year where we've had good growing conditions. A lot of the upper Midwest is experienced that. Fiber digestibility is a little lower. It's harder to push the really higher milk production that we've been used to. And so one of the things that we can do to help that, because we can't do a lot about the growing conditions, but one of the things we can do is begin to back our populations down a little bit, because we know, and you've done some great work in this arena, it maybe hasn't been published as much as it should have, but as we've continued to back down populations, we've increased fiber digestibility all along the way. Now, it's one thing that's adverse to the industry today, because the industry is pushing higher pops, and we're losing fiber digestibility as a result of our management, not as a result of the weather.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we've pushed, and the industry's pushed higher pops because what we know is that the higher the population, the greater the yield. okay, to an extent, you know, and especially with perfect growing conditions, you get some of these hot, dry, droughty times, and actually a high population can be very detrimental to yield. But, you know, the higher we push population, the higher the yield, but we are definitely negatively affecting quality there. And fiber digestibility on any level that we test, the higher the population that we push. So really what it is, it's striking that balance of, okay, you know, where do we get the highest quality and the highest yield? You know, and really that's more of a medium to medium high population place for guys. You know, I hate to throw out a specific number and a specific range, because guys in Kansas, medium high to them is not the same as a guy in central Wisconsin, medium high. But you know, really what we've seen is about somewhere in that 30,000, 30 to 36,000, somewhere in that range is where we've really seen the greatest yield and the greatest quality potential there. And so I think that there are ways that we can manage around some of this forage quality just by our planting practices and growing practices.
Get those plants apart, you know, whether that's twin rows, split rows, whatever it is, get the plants apart, and you can maintain some of that population but you can still increase your fiber digestibility by getting the plants apart. And by doing so, you're going to need to find a corn that'll flex, because most of the corn in the industry today is very determinate, very fixed, and it only responds to population.
Yeah.
But it does not respond then to forage quality or to fiber quality.
Absolutely.
So find those corn hybrids that you can plant at lower pops and still turn yield.
All right. Lynn, I want to say thanks for joining us this morning
and
being part of this. I think sometimes here at Master's Choice, we have pretty young staff, and you and I kind of get lumped in the same canoe at times, it's somewhat of that little old man canoe, but hey, any day I'd go down that river with you, Lynn, and
yeah,
I appreciate
that's
you.
That's the same here, brother.
We really appreciate you all joining us this morning for the MC podcast, and you know, we're going to be doing these, and so check back with us next week for the second one, and we really appreciate you joining us for the first ever MC podcast. We'll be right back.